Continuing to roll on and continuing to impress. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, to the point that I'm speechless, honestly. Like, when I try to describe what this season is in comparison to what we've seen previously or what, it just doesn't seem like there can be any comparison. It feels, am I wrong in saying that it feels really, really different, and it's hitting every chord.
In some ways it feels really different, and then in other ways there's such familiar elements that still make it Doctor Who.
Oh, heck yes. Like, there's so many things that are reminiscent of things that I loved and then I feel like I've forgotten, and now they're coming back, and it's like, oh, that warm feeling that rushes over you of familiarity.
The style is what I feel like is the most different. Just the visual style and even just the directing, you can tell, is a lot different than what we got from the Moffat era.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this as I was watching the episode, the second episode of this season, and I was remembering back to the introduction of Capaldi. And if you're like a new viewer and you're jumping into Doctor Who, and sometimes we'll get new viewers that jump in right at a new Doctor, right? And if you're jumping in at Capaldi and you're jumping in on Capaldi's first episode, and within the first 5 minutes you see Mr. Potato Head pop out, you're kind of already thrown back. You're thrown out of it. You know?
Yeah.
I was thinking about that because I was like, wow, the first episode featuring Capaldi has some really bizarre elements. You know, the dinosaur. Yeah. And I mean, I love that episode. I actually really like that episode.
Yeah.
But I like it because I'm a longtime Who fan who had watched all the previous seasons, and I was prepared for some of that weirdness.
Yeah.
And I mean,
absolutely.
You get Strax right there, right at the beginning, you know, and you're kind of like, if you're a new viewer, you're like, what is this? What is this show that I'm watching? And this Doctor Who is so much more friendly to new viewers. It's still Doctor Who, but it hasn't thrown anything at us yet where you're just like, wait, what is this? You know, it just feels like a really well-made modern television show.
Yeah, and there's elements throughout it. And you mentioned just like the directing and kind of how it's shot, and those aspects of it feel different. Like, I don't ever remember as having as many like changes in focal point of what you're looking at as in the screen. Like, there were a couple of shots in this episode of the Ghost Monument where the entire screen is blurry until all of a sudden something finally walks into what the focus is, or it'll be focusing on the doctor talking, and all of a sudden that focal point will change and you're focusing something further away, and it's just very dynamic in how it's shot. And so it feels grounded and it feels modern compared to what we might have seen previously. And it's, I don't know, I've watched this episode 3 times in the past 2 days. It took me a little bit longer to jump into the first watch, but then I watched it. I sent you messages mid-flight. I found out that I could message in the middle of my flight that I watched this on. And then as soon as I stopped messaging you, I watched it a second time. In the second watch through, I was smiling just as much as the first time. And I was like as ecstatic as I was the first time I watched it. And then tonight I get home and my wife is like, hey, are we going to watch it? And I'm like, oh, heck yes. If you're wanting to watch it, I'll watch it with you. And we just finished right before I jumped on this call. So I could go back and watch this episode like 5 more times and probably come out of it just as excited as I am right now.
So how many, you've seen it 3 times?
I've watched it 3 times in the last 24 hours.
Okay. I think I'm at 2 and like a quarter. I was working through it before we started recording. I didn't quite make it. I was trying to pick up some specific dialogue because there was some pretty interesting dialogue that was dropped on us. But before we just continue to ramble on. We haven't even really introduced the episode or what we're talking about. We are going to just jump right into the episode review for The Ghost Monument, which is Series 11, Episode 2. This one was written by Chris Chibnall and directed by Mark Tondere.
I've heard
So,
of both
yeah.
ways.
So this one, we got left with a big cliffhanger right at the end of episode one. They're literally the doctor accidentally transports them into the middle of space, and she didn't mean to
Yes.
bring everyone along with her, right? She was going to go by herself to the TARDIS and this other planet, and she ended up in the middle of space, accidentally bringing along Graham and Yaz and Ryan. And they're just kind of left there, and you're like, okay, what's going to happen? Now, I remember we had talked about it. Okay, what's going to happen next? And we had both kind of agreed. We thought that ship that we had seen in the trailer would be what kind of popped up and saved them,
Yeah. Yep. That
which we were half
was
right,
a
because that ship saved two of them.
Right. It picked up 50% of the crew.
But yeah, so they kind of telegraphed that a little bit, I think. We obviously knew that no one was going to die in that scene. They're not going to kill off. I mean, that would have been some crazy, crazy twist if they had killed off one
Oh,
of the
heck yes.
companions that early in the game. But yeah, so they all make it. They get rescued by two different ships, and they land on this planet, Desolation,
Yeah.
and then off to the races. Literally a race going on.
Yeah. nice work. Yeah, literally a race, space race, thousands of planets and hundreds of terrains, and it sounds like a pretty fun race if you can survive.
Yes. And right away I recognize, so this might become a Chibnall thing. I'm wondering now. But right away I recognized the guy who plays Epso was a very main character in the last series of Broadchurch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we got another Broadchurch cast member playing a character. Right away I saw him. I'm like, "Oh, that guy's from Broadchurch." So I wonder if he's going to kind of pick some of his favorites from
You know what? I'm totally cool with that because one thing that I'm noticing about this episode specifically, the acting that we get from the non-main characters, it's incredible. Like these the Ebso and Engstrom, they were flawless throughout the entire thing. It was incredible how just everything worked so well together. It seemed like they were solid actors
Yeah.
that they brought in.
We sound like such fanboys right now.
Oh my
We
goodness, I
and
am terrible.
I know we've gained a lot of new listeners, I think, with the new series starting and stuff, and I noticed kind of our download numbers are going up. And so I know we've got new listeners. So for people that are just starting to listen, this isn't typical for us. Like we kind of have a good cop, bad cop thing. Adam tends to be a little bit more friendly about episodes. I tend to be critical. We definitely can be harsh, so this kind of glowing review of these first couple episodes is a little out of the ordinary.
I'm like on
I
10
think we're
right
both
now.
really surprised that we like this. I mean, I think we both had high hopes and expected to enjoy the new Doctor. I don't think either of us expected to like her and Chibnall's work this much.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if you are a new listener and these are some of your first episodes that you're listening to, during kind of the down period between series, we went back and rewatched the episodes of Doctor Who that Chibnall was already involved in. Those weren't as positive. Thinking back to the first one, 42, where Tennant's on the spaceship and like the sun is eating or infesting people. And yeah, not that positive. I really didn't expect to get this solid of quality out of these first two episodes that we're seeing. But yeah, I'm on 10 right now. I'm hyped for what's coming and what has happened.
Well, speaking of, you were saying the guest stars being solid actors. I completely agree. I feel like that was a weak point in a lot of Doctor Who, and especially in the Capaldi era, is some of the guest stars just weren't up to par. And Capaldi was so good. Capaldi
Yeah.
was such a good actor that he would almost make others look bad. And I remember having some of these side characters were just like, wow, where do they find these actors? They just don't seem like they can keep up. But that wasn't the case at all. These actors that they had for this episode specifically were great. I mean, let's call out Susan Lynch played Angstrom, and Sean Dooley played Epso. And they both, I mean, they were in the episode just as much as anyone else. They were there almost like two extra companions, and they were both really intriguing characters.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
Epso was kind of like a Han Solo type. You know, he's got his ship that's falling apart, but he's like, you know, bragging on his ship. I got some Han Solo vibes early on from him.
Nice, nice. They've written millions. What did he say? Millions love the ship. They've written songs about it. Yeah. And the doctor says they'll be writing operas about our death if we don't do something. solid exchange.
Yeah, very good. We got to see how companions, how these specific companions react when put into extreme situations, for sure. I think they all held it together pretty good. Ryan maybe being the exception with a couple of freakouts. But they kind of it seems like their personalities are starting to get set what we can expect from these characters. And Ryan seems like he might be the one that's a bit of a spaz.
He might be, I don't know. I think spaz might be a little bit extreme. He definitely seems like he's definitely going to say what's on his mind. He's not going to try to fake a calm or be under control. He's both proper awesome at the right moments and then also proper stressed in the other moments.
I was specifically thinking about the scene where he runs out with the laser gun or whatever, and he's like, Call of Duty, you know, like he goes out there and he comes out there and lands a couple of nice headshots, but then quickly realizes that they're getting right back up, and he even kind of yelps a little bit as he's running back in, almost a little too. I will say that was one joke that didn't land for me that well, was kind of that almost like comedic, you know, like you know, running back into the room.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, if we were to point out anything about the episode that was like, that scene in and of itself seemed like it was somewhat different from the entire tone of the episode. Like, I admit, I did laugh at it and I did enjoy it. But when viewing the episode as a whole, it does seem like that was just off key, just ever so slightly with what they were doing with the episode. I still thought it was funny, the like yell as it slowly gets higher and higher as he's running away and he like slides through the hole.
The high pitched I laughed. Scream. Well, hey, we had talked about in the first episode, we had the eat my salad scene that seemed a little out of the ordinary and kind of wacky. Yep. So maybe that's kind of just a Chibnall thing. Maybe every episode we get this kind of out of place, wacky scene.
Hey, I mean, the episodes are longer. These scenes aren't that long. And so if that is the one thing that we get in the Chibnall era is just like this 30-second to maybe a minute and a half section where it's like, what in the world were you thinking? I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. Like, I still laugh about Eat My Salad Halloween. Like, that is a solid line. And we're getting closer to Halloween, and I think I might just, like, hand out salad from my door. So it's going
to
be
that
fun.
That should be your costume. No. You need to do a couple's costume. Like, one of you dresses up as Eat My Salad. The other one dresses up as Tim Shaw. And nice. Then she just throws salad at you all night.
Oh, my goodness. I just had a brilliant idea for, like, a t-shirt. I honestly, like, hello, my name is one of those tags. I seriously want to make a t-shirt that says Tim Shaw. Like, hello, my name is Tim Shaw.
Yeah, there's going to be there's some good opportunities there for some clever t-shirts with the Tim Shaw stuff.
And Tim Shaw got mentioned in this episode.
He did. The Stenza. I mean, it was a big – kind of a big deal that they're – I mean, they had said – one of the things they had talked about with leading into the new series – was that it was going to be kind of more of a storyline across all episodes instead of being these standalones. I still feel like these first two episodes felt very standalone, but they did tie in some connecting threads, and the Stenza being a pretty big connecting thread.
Yeah, and if this is the way that Chibnall and the writing team approaches standalone episodes, I'm cool with that. Like, It does link from one episode to another. They are talking about things that have come up, but it's not like we're hitting cliffhangers. It's not like we're getting to the end of the episode and it's like, oh, wait until next week to figure out how all of these other things are resolved. But one of those things that I've always enjoyed about Doctor Who are these threads that show up maybe two episodes, then they kind of disappear for an episode and then they show up again. If that is how we're approaching this, then my whole perception of what standalone means is shifted, and I'm all for it. I was a little afraid when they were like, oh, these are all basically like standalone box episodes. But if this is how they're approaching it, I'm all for it.
And maybe it's like we got with Matt Smith, we got that crack in the wall in the Amy Pond, her first introduction, and then that literally was a thread through his entire run.
Yeah.
You know, and you really don't get it resolved until his regeneration. I don't even know if we still have it resolved. It's kind of like something happened with it, but it was kind of a weird in and out thread. I kind of hope that Chibnall's stuff doesn't quite do that. I would rather like more timely wrap-ups of some of these mysteries instead of it being something that lasts so long that you almost forgot it was a thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one thing that stuck out to me, as I'm watching the episodes, one thing that I really enjoy is that even in these individual episodes, they'll introduce something and it's like, oh, I wonder what they mean by that. And then 5 minutes later, they'll all of a sudden like resolve that for you. And then they'll introduce another mystery. And so the entire episode, you're waiting for, oh, well, this was said by this character. I wonder what they mean by that. Oh, it's now resolved. Oh, this was just said. I wonder what that means. And then it's resolved. Like the don't touch the water. Then 5 minutes later, the doctor explains why you don't touch the water. My home planet is big, or my bad things are happening to my family. Oh, but I don't know you. 5 minutes later, that's resolved. It's this slow unfolding of the story throughout the episode. I don't feel like we've had quite that approach to writing in the past. So I've really enjoyed that. So if it happens over a longer scale, as long as we get those resolutions, I'm cool.
We had a kind of a trifecta of villains in this episode. It wasn't just one major kind of thing that they were dealing with. We had Illen, who was the hologram race guy, race conductor. I don't know.
Yeah.
The race was called the Rally of the 12 Galaxies. Pretty cool race name. And Illen was, I guess he was the original winner of this thing, and then he's running it now, and he wants this to be the last time it's run. So this is the final run of this, and we're down to the final two contestants, which happen to be Epso and Angstrom. What did you think about Illen as a character, as kind of this behind-the-curtain type of bad guy?
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth as to whether or not he really was a villain or if he was somewhat of a neutral party. So like the moment that he says one of you will be left behind, it's like, ooh, he's a villain. And then he gets called on the carpet on that. And then he's like, well, greatest reward, biggest risk. Like you knew about this when you signed up. He definitely isn't like an honorable character that we should look to and think of as being a good person and an example to follow. But I don't know if he's necessarily a villain or if he just happens to be there and he's not the best example.
I like how the doctor right away recognized that he was a hologram. And this, yes. I mean, the one thing I will say, and I was watching this with my wife last night, and she called this out too, but the CGI, the special effects seem like they have really taken it up a notch.
Yeah.
I mean, the spaceship, I thought, like kind of sitting in the desert and this like planetscape with the spaceship sitting there, it looked really, really good. And then the scene where she kind of wipes her, you know, she kind of runs her hand through the hologram and it kind of flickers off for a second and flickers back on. It was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I did notice that when the spaceship is crashing, so that probably had to be one of the most difficult scenes to create. And they did a really good job of doing it when it was far away. And then when it was striking down, they only cut to it for a nanosecond, just enough so that you could see, oh, it's crashing, and then there's a cloud of dust. But in that moment where it's crashing, it does look a little bit rough, but they were smart enough to not like focus on that. So yeah, the entire episode looked incredible. And one of those moments where that it was probably going to be the hardest, it seems like they knew, okay, we're not going to spend a lot of time on that. Let's back out and let's focus on those scenes where the doctor's visibly with someone and swipes across and then that looks good, or the targeting computer of the sniper bots, like that even looked good. It all made sense. It all worked.
And Illyn, he introduced the idea of them trying to get to this ghost monument. That was kind of the finish line, right? And then we find out that the TARDIS, at least what we think is the TARDIS at this point in the show, is there, is going to be there. And the doctor is like, oh, that's where my TARDIS is. And we have to tag along with these people so we can find it too. At this moment, because I know you, me and you had kind of made predictions about when the TARDIS would be back in the show. Were you still kind of thinking along the lines of, oh, this is just, it's there, but they're not going to actually get to it, or it's going to disappear again, that it's no longer going to be, or it's still going to be further out into the season? Or were you like, oh, I was wrong?
I kind of wavered. I kind of thought, you know what? There's still the potential that something could happen and it could disappear again. And then they're going to have to jump ship with Epso or Engstrom to find the TARDIS again. So I still had in the back of my mind that Chibnall could like pull the rug out from underneath us, but I was starting to doubt my own predictions.
Were you excited about the TARDIS coming back, or were you kind of hoping for a TARDIS-less first half of the season?
Yeah, so I thought it would be a fun element to be TARDIS-less. But once we get to the end of this episode, that has totally changed.
You were happy to see her.
Changed. There's so much that I want to say about the TARDIS.
All right, we'll get there. We'll save that for the last. Because yeah, that was the highlight of this episode for me. But what else? So the other kind of villains, quote unquote villains that they ran across, we have official names for them. The Remnants, which is the souls of what were they called again? The Stenza?
Were they the souls of the Stenza?
I thought that's what it was. Like the Stenza, like put, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting the details wrong. I thought it was something about they put their essence into these things.
So the way that I understood it is that the scientists that the Stenza stole and put on the planet and tortured and all that other stuff, they basically were bioengineering all of these creatures and weapons for the Stenza to use. Similar to like the Gathering Coil, how the doctor's like, ooh, this is kind of different. It's all of these. It's been bioengineered and like all of that stuff. I kind of felt like that's what the Remnant were. So they were created by the scientists as basically like killing machines for the Stenza. So they were basically just, yeah, they were forced to create all of these horrible things, and then they tried to destroy all of them, but it looks like the Remnants got away from them.
Okay. Yeah, I think I just missed, I wasn't catching those details, but that makes sense. But yeah, so we have the through line of the Stenza, because the Stenza showed up, you know, Tim Shaw was Stenza. Now we have the Stenza being a part of this. So I wonder if that's going to be something that's going to be kind of a big foil for the Doctor throughout this season, is this connection to the Stenza. Like, are we going to see, I mean, Tim Shaw could still be around. Like, we didn't necessarily see him die. So maybe we even get another appearance of Tim Shaw later in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of expecting it right now. The Stenza seem to be pretty crazy when it comes to like they are cleansing planets. They're wiping out populations. They don't seem like they're anything small when it comes to the universe. So,
and they're a current thing, right? Because the Doctor didn't time travel when she jumped to this planet. This is happening now. So this is a current threat that's out there in our modern time, and they must be far reaching. You know, he came all the way to Earth, but then they happen to jump to a completely random planet, and the Stenza have affected that planet as well. And Angstrom's planet was decimated by the Stenza.
Yeah,
so they're so kind of like the Borg of 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that, maybe similar to what we already mentioned, we might go another episode without hearing about them, and then maybe they'll show up again.
I think like the Rosa Parks episode, which is coming up next, I think would be likely a Stenza-free episode.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I had in mind.
Yeah. But and then the sniper bots was kind of the other thing. We had talked about Ryan's, running out and kind of trying to take him down, but then realizing pretty quickly that that's not going to be the best way to take him out. The doctor is definitely anti-gun. I mean, we already knew that about the doctor, but they're really hammering that one home, especially in this episode. I think more like I've always gotten the impression that the doctor is somewhat of a pacifist. I mean, I think he slash she has kind of towed the line in different instances where he kind of tricks people into killing themselves or does something that results in someone's death, but he didn't directly kill them, kind of thing. So he kind of cheats a little bit, but for the most part, very pacifist, very anti-gun, and I feel like this doctor might be even more so. They're going to make that kind of a big point about her.
And yeah, I mean, I can definitely see we've had several comments throughout the first episode, and now we have the comments made in this episode. Even going back to the, oh goodness, I'm gonna forget what is called, but she achieved the rank of Grand Master Pacifist in the, is it
Oh yeah, the Aikido,
Venusian?
Venusian Aikido or something.
Yes, thank
Yeah.
you. Yeah, so she achieved the rank of Grand Master Pacifist. So,
Did you catch
I
the
mean,
classic doctor reference there?
yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay.
That stuck out to me as well. But like that idea of, I mean, we said that she or this doctor might be a little bit more pacifistic than what we might have seen in the past, and Grand Master pacifistic, if you will.
They literally use the word pacifist. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
exactly. But I mean, in light of where we are in the regenerations that we've seen, just starting with Eccleston, like it kind of made me want to go back to watch the 50th anniversary episode where the War Doctor's sitting there and he's looking at Tennant and Smith, and he's like, "How long does it take you to forget what you've done?" And kind of like calling out those different personality traits in regards to what happened to Gallifrey that the doctor was responsible for. And so I'm trying to figure out if this is just like a natural progression of the character to get to maybe what you might be calling out in that even more pacifistic than what we might have seen previously. But that's just me kind of rambling on.
Yeah. I do think it's funny the kind of the same thing that happened with Tim Shaw, where you and I kind of disagreed on this, but I was kind of like it's not that big a deal that Carl kicked him off the crane, and I was kind of surprised by the doctor's reaction to it. It kind of the same in this episode where Ryan was like, "Oh, I'm gonna take this gun and go do the thing," and she's like, "No guns, no guns," and then even Graham's like, "Well, maybe we should let him," and then her solution. I guess I was a little confused about I she, the result of her actions was the exact same as the result of Ryan's actions. So I didn't know. I guess maybe it's just the idea that it's a gun is the issue and not necessarily the violence, because she's still okay taking people out. She just doesn't necessarily want to use the gun to do it.
This might
Right?
be
I
a
don't
discussion. This might be another a discussion for another time because I have some serious thoughts. But yeah, I mean, I could definitely see how you get there. Yeah, I'm wondering about like maybe there might be some kernel of it escalated at that point with Ryan.
So
When
she was
Ryan.
forced to do what she did?
Well, not that she was forced to, but that maybe if she would have taken that step initially, then they wouldn't have all been put in the danger that they were then. Or maybe if they would have stopped and thought through what was going to happen first before him running out, then there could have been other options that could have been done. And then as far as like Carl kicking Tim Shaw off, again, like that might seem like a good action at that point in time, but what was she going to do in that moment that could possibly diffuse further things down the road? Like maybe Tim Shaw comes back now with a vengeance. I don't know. Just saying.
I like your counterpoint until you brought up Tim Shaw. You
Yeah.
lost me there. But no, no. It's a good point. Yeah, because I think Ryan ultimately made things worse, which was maybe the point. But yeah, so We did get a couple more things that I wanted to mention before we wrap up for the night. Is we did get the what did they call them? So we were talking about the remnants, but we did get the scene where the doctor kind of outsmarts the remnants as well with using the self-lighting cigar.
Yes.
You knew right as he started talking about the self-lighting cigar and the snap of the fingers, you knew that that was going to come into play later on.
Oh,
Like,
dang. When they mentioned the snap of the fingers, I got excited. But yeah.
So they have that scene where the gas rises and these remnants are gonna, I guess, feed off of the life of these characters. They have the nice exchange with the doctor, and some of my favorite dialogue kind of happens at this point, where the doctor's going back and forth, and oh, you want my life? You know, I've got 12 of them, or whatever she said.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of going back and forth there. But then they bring up something that really introduces a mysterious element that they did not explain, which was they had talked about the timeless child,
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh
which
my
was like,
goodness.
yeah, it was kind of one of those like goosebump tingly Doctor Who moments where you're like, oh, new mystery about the doctor. And we, you know, had probably has something to do with her history. And we had kind of talked pre-show about some of our, some of the things it could mean. But I really love that drop. And I'm really intrigued by it.
Yeah, that's one of those things that as soon as it's said, like you're searching through your memory banks, you're jumping online to figure out, okay, timeless child, what does this mean? And there's nothing. Like it's there it is one of those mysteries, and I mean
Now,
props to.
did they say something about outcast, like being an outcast? Did that
Yeah.
line come up?
Yeah.
I might drop the clip into the episode here as we're talking about it, but
Further back, the timeless child.
What did you just say?
She doesn't know.
What are you talking about? What can you see?
We see what's hidden, even from yourself. The outcast, abandoned and unknown.
Get out of my head.
It was something about being an outcast, something about the timeless child. She was really affected by it when they said it.
Yeah.
And she's like, get out of my head. And so it means something. Both of us, pre-show, we were talking about this. We had both kind of referred back to the Capaldi episode where you have the child in the barn
Yep.
and Clara talks to the child and stuff, and you get to see the doctor as a very small child. So that came to my head as soon as they were talking about the timeless child. Is that what they're referring to, the doctor? Are they referring to the doctor having a child? Are they referring to a completely different character? We don't know yet, but I love all the questions it brings up.
Yeah, and the remnant mentioned like she doesn't even know that. Like she doesn't know what they're talking about.
Like maybe she forgot.
It's so deep inside that she doesn't remember what they're talking about. So yeah, that's gonna be a fun one to see what happens. What if it's not even this series? What if it's not until next series that we get resolution to that?
Yeah, what if?
Oh man.
So that was exciting. The other and then two more things I wanted to bring up. The doctor's self-doubt at the end was very surprising to me, where the TARDIS is there for a second and or no, they get there and the TARDIS isn't there. And
Right,
she's
right.
expecting it to be there, and then Ilan, you know, they tie the race ties, they do like a joint winner thing, and then Ilan just takes everybody away except for the doctor. He leaves the doctor and her companion stranded at the top of this rock, no TARDIS to be found. And the doctor right away, it doesn't take very long for the doctor to kind of be like, yeah, you know, we you know, we're not going to survive this. And I forget how long she said that she thought they might survive, and the TARDIS isn't coming. And she seemed very defeated. This is a version of the doctor I don't think I've ever seen, especially not this early on in a doctor's run.
Yeah, and yet there's something about it that just like it draws me more towards the doctor's character. Like Whitaker's doctor, there's something different about this doctor that I don't think that we've seen as much of or maybe at all in previous incarnations. And I think this self-doubt kind of plays into it. And it was brought up a couple times, and we were talking about this before we officially started recording, but it was brought up a couple times, even by the Remnant, that there is some element of fear to this doctor, that the doctor isn't even quite sure of herself right now, where we get in the first episode where it's like, I think I can do this, or I think I've done this in the past, or I think I'm good at this. And we kind of associate that to being like fresh out of regeneration. And yet there's still elements of that in this episode where it's like, oh, I'm good at this type of stuff, right? Like I should be able to do this. And there's this self-doubt that underlies the character. And is this going to be something, my question is this going to be something that kind of goes with the doctor throughout maybe this entire first series, or maybe the entire run of this doctor? Or is this just for the next like 2-3 episodes, as this doctor becomes more established in what this doctor is capable of and what Whitaker's doctor is able to do? It's intriguing, but yeah, that moment of self-doubt at the end, even getting called out by her own companions, is an interesting nuance to this doctor.
Yeah, I mean, it was her companions that really had to snap her out of it. They were the ones that were like, hey, we can do this. And it's typically the other way around. You know, you don't typically have the companions as the ones to encourage the doctor. It's usually the doctor that has to kind of encourage the companions and keep them positive. So,
yeah,
it was interesting. And the doctor says, I'm sorry. I know you were keeping track of that as one of the things you're keeping track of. So she definitely said, I'm sorry. At that point, and you kind of just brought it up, but the doctor does like to say, I've noticed this kind of as a recurring thing, I'm good at this. I'm good at that, right? I think I'm good at that. Like she did it in the first episode. She definitely dropped it a couple times in this episode. And I remembered back to Capaldi. I don't know if you remember this line. I think we actually have a title of one of our episodes is this line. I'm good at traps. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Is this a trap? I'm good at traps. Yeah, so I kind of thought that's a cool... I don't know if it's intentional callback, but it's not the first time we've heard the doctor say, I'm good at something. So, but she likes to say it a lot. I think she said it at least 3 or 4 times now in the season that she's good at something specific.
No, that's so good.
Yes, so, and then we do get the TARDIS materialize. She uses her sonic to kind of, you know, help it phase in, and the TARDIS comes back, and we get this new version of the TARDIS that we had seen in preview images, so we kind of knew that it was going to be a new paint job and things were going to be different, but we hadn't really seen the interior yet. So my favorite thing about this episode, hands down, was just the Doctor's excitement at the TARDIS's return. Like something about that connection between, I would now call the TARDIS definitely a character.
Yeah.
Is just that connection between those two characters. And I love the part where she's like, come to daddy, come to mommy. You know, like, you know, kind of like almost she forgot herself in the moment there because she was so excited to see her friend back. And I was getting kind of emotional as I'm watching the scene. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, I didn't think I'd care this much to see the TARDIS back, but I do.
No, absolutely. And it, I mean, you already called me out for it. Like, I didn't expect to see the TARDIS at this point in time. But when we get to this point and to watch that exchange and really like huge, huge applause for how Whitaker handled it and like how the lines were delivered and the pacing of everything. And when she walks up to the door and she says, I've lost my key. And then the door just opens for her.
Pops open.
That is like, oh my goodness. And like you said, I don't know, maybe it was just me, but I feel like we've kind of lost the TARDIS as a character, like through Tennant and Smith's run and even Eccleston's run. Like it was a character to some extent where it would take them wherever it wanted to take them and where they needed to be. And it kind of felt like that might have been lost a little bit with each one of the doctors. But then in this moment to have Whitaker talking to the TARDIS as she did, and like just those little moments and the excitement on the doctor's face at each turn as she sees it appear, and then as she walks up and she kind of feels it and sees the sign on the door and the door opens and she walks inside, and it is just, that was a super, super special moment of the episode.
Yes. And they found a new way to introduce companions to the TARDIS that didn't feel rehashed. They
No.
didn't say bigger on the inside. I know they've done it before where they haven't said bigger on the inside, but there's always a certain cadence to how that happens and how that goes down, and they change it up a little bit, you know, per depending on who is being introduced. But I thought this was very unique in that you still had the awe and wonder from the companions, but there was never that moment of like, you know, cheesiness, like, oh, it's bigger on the
Right.
inside, and kind of what you would expect. Or like it's smaller on the outside, you know, like I think they used that one time.
Yep.
I liked that it was just kind of like they were surprised it was bigger on the inside, but it was kind of like, how is this possible? Or I forget the exact lines, but oh, what was the I should have pulled this dialogue up, but what was the exchange between Yaz and the doctor where Yaz says something like, that's not possible, and then she's like, well, maybe not for you.
So Graham said, how did you fit all of this inside of the police box? And the doctor responds, dimensional engineering. And Yaz says, you can't engineer dimensions. And that's where the doctor says, you might not be able
You might
to.
not be able to. Yeah, like that. It's such a great way of saying it's bigger on the inside without saying it's bigger on the inside. And it was really good writing. I was really impressed with the entire scene. I mean, this whole episode I really liked, but the reintroduction of the TARDIS was maybe one of the best TARDIS Doctor moments that we've ever gotten.
And I think you said it best, like the awe and wonder. Like we might have had awe and wonder in previous instances, but it didn't have like a weight to it. It didn't seem like true awe and wonder. There was always that expectancy of something else happening. But from the moment that the TARDIS stabilizes, it begins this like awe and wonder with the music that's playing in the background as the doctor runs, the camera angles, like it just all emphasizes that awe and wonder. And as they all walk in and you see the looks on their faces, I think that's exactly what it is. Like you as the audience begin to feel that awe and wonder of the TARDIS, of something that is bigger on the inside than on the outside, but yet never specifically called out. But yeah, awe and wonder, that's what that moment feels like.
So let's talk about the design a little bit of the interior and what our thoughts on it are. There's some unique elements in this TARDIS. There's some familiar elements. What did you like? Kind of what stuck out to you as maybe some things that you really liked about it, and maybe a couple things that you didn't necessarily like about it, or maybe you liked everything.
Yeah, I think I liked everything.
Okay.
Like it's what I want the TARDIS to be, something that's familiar but not of this world. That's probably the best way to put it. Where it's like it still has those weird steampunk elements to it that I like the circles and the squares and like the hard edges, but yet it's very soft in some places. It had these weird gem things sticking up from the floor. It's different. But yet there's those like functional bits, like the hourglass that she flips and the lever that gets pulled down. And I don't know, I really like the design of this TARDIS.
The console reminded me a lot of Smith's TARDIS, kind of some of the steampunk-like elements, and you know, like that time turner thing that she flips down. That you were thinking about, how would that even have any kind of function at all? But it still looks cool.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
there were a couple weird elements I thought. So the one thing that stuck out to me that I didn't love, and I'll get used to it, is just all the crystals everywhere, like all the yellow crystals that happen to match her Sonic. Like it's that same kind of shade, that same like
That's
yellowish shade.
true. Yeah, I can see that.
I didn't love that, but I mean the kind of the paneling on the walls with the really geometrical shapes was cool, but very alien looking, very sci-fi. Kind of had like, it was almost like if Tennant's TARDIS and the First Doctor's TARDIS kind of merged, that's the design that would pop out, you know.
Yeah.
So I liked kind of that, and one of the random things I thought was kind of funny is there's actually like a little crystal version of the TARDIS. Did you
Yes,
see that?
that is
That
interesting,
spins.
but yeah, I saw that.
a little TARDIS inside. It almost looked like something a fan would have on their desk. You know, yep, I have exactly. a couple TARDIS on my desk. I have one right in front of me right now. So it's kind of like it almost was a little too in-universe maybe or out-of-universe. So I thought that was a little odd. But overall, I really love the interior of the design of it. The crystals is the only thing that kind of stuck out to me as a little odd. Because even the middle console or the middle like whatever that thing's called, and right in that it's usually kind of like a tube in the middle.
Yeah.
That has the thing that moves up and down.
Yeah, the Vorp.
Yeah, that is now like just a column of crystals, you know, and that's very different than anything we've ever seen before.
Yeah.
So that was a little odd for me, but other than that, I did like the interior, and I love the doctor's like kind of what did she say? She was just kind of like, I like it, with a really big smile on her face, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, and she got her own little like cookie dispenser.
Yeah, her custard cream dispenser. That's pretty awesome.
So I guess that's going to be kind of the new, like a Jelly Baby or what's the other
Jamie
one?
Jamie Dodgers.
Talk about Jamie Dodgers. Yeah. So yeah, now it's going to be custard cream cookies.
Hey, I'm all for those.
I guess they call them biscuits. And
yeah, from what I've been told.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I was excited. I was excited that I was right, because you'd kind of asked me when I thought the doctor or when the TARDIS was going to be back, and I said I think it's going to be back episode two. So I was happy to be right about that, and I was just happy to see the TARDIS back. I think that is a big thing about Doctor Who that I enjoy is the TARDIS, and so Doctor Who without the TARDIS would feel a little weird. Yeah. So I'm happy that she came back in episode two.
Yeah, and it was a good reminder in regards to why the TARDIS needs to be here. Yeah. Can I run through just four real quick things that stuck out to me that we haven't mentioned?
Oh yeah, yeah, go ahead.
I'm really interested that the Doctor is calling the companions best friends, like not companions, they're best friends. I'm wondering if that's just going to be what's called out from this point forward. They're not companions, they're best friends. So I found that interesting.
I've seen just a quick rebuttal to that. I have actually, they talked about that in the panel at New York Comic Con, and they kept even correcting themselves. If they would say companion, they kept correcting themselves to say friends. So I do think it's an intentional, they're trying to change the vernacular of Doctor Who and say, you know, okay, everybody, we don't call them companions anymore. But that being said, I have watched a lot of production videos, like behind the scenes videos and stuff, because they've been releasing a lot of really cool behind the scenes stuff for the season. And almost all the people that are working on production, when they talked about the companions, they say companions. So it's still not quite consistent, but I can tell definitely that Chibnall and Whitaker both are very much trying to use the term friends, and not everybody else is quite on board yet, but it is interesting to see if they're going to try to phase out the term companion. That's such a accepted term though across all of the fandom, that it's going to be, even if they stop in the production side of things calling them companions, I feel like fans are still just going to always call them companions. I don't know, that's going to take a while to phase out.
It definitely feels like it's going to. Well, kind of along those lines, I find it interesting that is this the first Doctor that didn't intentionally take the friends / companions with them, like totally accidental. The Doctor was going to go off by herself, and then it happened. Maybe we've seen that before, but I just thought that was funny. Graham and Ryan did have a Nan conversation. Graham did bring up whether Ryan was going to call him granddad still. So I'm wondering if that's going to continue, and we're going to continue to see that change. I thought there was a slight Lord of the Rings reference when she goes out and she's reading the floor, and then like the whole they're coming. I don't know. It was probably just me, but I was like, ooh, Lord of the Rings. and then I'm thoroughly impressed that there aren't any holes. So like Graham calls out, we're on an alien planet. How can we understand? And typically we would just be like, oh, the TARDIS. That's how. That's why all of this is making sense. They patched that hole with, well, the med pods implanted the translator in you. And then the dimensional engineering, they're doing a great job of explaining all of these things that might be taken for granted if you consistently watch Doctor Who. But again, this is a great season to jump in for the first time. And they're doing a good job of kind of leaving no plot holes or no holes whatsoever in how certain things happen.
Yeah. If they had said, they have a cave troll. Then I would have totally bought that as a Lord of the Rings reference.
Sean Bean would have just died, like walked into the room and got shot by a sniper.
Oh, that's what we need. We need Sean Bean in a Doctor Who episode. We definitely need that. That would be amazing. The whole need to explain why you understand the language thing, I definitely just don't even need that. I remember watching Star Trek, and they'd always have episodes where they try to explain why they can understand the alien races, and I'm like, I don't care. Like, that's something I give a pass on. I don't need that explanation. But they did throw it in there. So I guess that's my commentary on your commentary. But they did release a couple cool images of the interior of the TARDIS that were a little bit more detailed than what we even saw in the episode. And there's like these little platforms, I guess, where everything's kind of up on, and along the bottom edge of the platforms is Gallifreyan, like glowing, which I thought was kind of a cool touch, kind of that circle type language. And I don't think we have like an official alphabet or kind of translation for any of that stuff, but man, if I could ever get like some official, like this means this, then I might consider some of that stuff for tattoos. But the Gallifreyan language included in the TARDIS interior was pretty cool as well.
That's awesome.
So I think with that, I think we're good. We kind of ran through that one a bit quick, but I think we covered everything.
Yeah, I'm cool just having it known. This was an incredible episode, and I'm stoked.
I can't wait to see more. We saw previews for the next one. We got the Rosa Parks episode coming up, which is set in the 1950s, I think they said. So yeah, a little bit of preview for that one, and really excited. Weekly Doctor Who is back, man.
Oh,
enjoy it until it's gone.
I'm loving it. All right. So good.
All right. So until next time, you guys can always leave us a review on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast, Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio. We have our Facebook group. Thanks for everyone that has been contributing to that recently. You can find us there. Bad Wolf Podcast Facebook group, and if you guys want to join, just send a request and we'll add you to the group. Instagram at Bad Wolf Radio, and you can always shoot us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time.
Later days.
What's another thing we could say at the out?
I was just trying to think of Eat my salad Halloween.
You should have said, yeah. Until next time.
Eat my salad Halloween.